The title of today's sermon is Restoration of Israel. And I'd like to begin in Revelation chapter 21. God's people, Israel, were scattered among the nations long before Jesus Christ was born. It happened a long time ago. Today, Israel does not know where they are. They don't even know who they are, except for the Jews. They've all been lost in history. But brethren, you and I, we know where they are, and we know who they are. They are the peoples of Europe, France, England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. They're scattered throughout Belgium, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Germany, Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. And they've traveled around the globe to every nation, including America, Canada, New Zealand, Australia. But they do not remember that they are brothers and sisters, all children of Israel, the sons of Jacob. The Bible ends with a chronicle of Israel restored. That's our title today, Restoration of Israel. And we see Israel dwelling in everlasting peace and safety. Revelation 21 and verse 2. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. God tells us these words because he wants us to have the big picture. God describes the holy city as having a great and a high wall. That is depicting the perfect peace and safety of Israel that will abound forevermore. The language harkens back to the imagery of a walled city that is safe and protected. Drop down to verse 12, Revelation 21 and verse 12. It had a wall, great and high, and had 12 gates. And at the gates, 12 angels. And names written thereon, on these gates, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. So we see the names of Jacob's sons inscribed above the gates to the new holy city, New Jerusalem. That's 1,000 years from now. And this concept of the children of Israel, the sons of Jacob, will still be prominent. So we know that in the very end, Israel is restored. God speaks of it in very long-lasting terms. That's our title today, The Restoration of Israel. Let's go over to Psalm chapter 106. Please turn with me. I think of God as having a schedule, like you and I work by schedules. And on God's daily chart of the many things that he has to do, there's one overriding task on his long-ranging agenda, and that's the restoration of his people, Israel. Now, it doesn't seem to us like it's on God's mind as we think each day. God's really worried, really thinking, apprehensive even about restoring Israel. But, brethren, let's understand this. It is very much on God's mind every day. Can you imagine that? That far in the future. It hasn't come to pass yet, but it will. Each of Jacob's sons will have his name, Joseph, Benjamin, Reuben, Judah, and so forth, boldly engraved above one of the doors to the eternal city, the holy city, New Jerusalem. God has not forgotten his people, Israel. But as we look around us today, all Israel has forgotten their God. We read in Psalm 106, 21, they have forgotten God, their Savior, which has done great things in Egypt. That harkens back to Egypt, doesn't it? And that's what we're going to be talking about today. What God did way back in Egypt. It starts there and it goes all the way to the New Jerusalem. What is God going to do with us all? It was the same with Jacob and Joseph and all the children of Israel, all the sons of Jacob. God allowed them to go into Egypt for the express purpose of delivering them out of Egypt. It seems counterintuitive, but God let them go into captivity so they could come out of captivity. That's a theme that's repeated over and over. In today's sermon, we are looking at the first reconciliation of the sons of Jacob, the children of Israel, which foreshadows, it looks forward to, the future restoration of Israel. Jacob's modern descendants today have a key role yet to play in God's plan. Let's take a look at what God will continue to do with Jacob, with Israel, with his 12 sons. Genesis chapter 42, and keep your marker back here in Genesis, brethren. We'll be there quite a bit. God says he's going to bring about the restitution of all things. That means that even though today this is not God's society, it's not God's world, God's system of things is going to be reinstituted in the future, beginning in the millennium. It's going to be a wonderful time when it all comes together, when it all comes to fruition. And we saw last time as we looked at Joseph, we saw the home of Jacob and his 12 boys was hit hard by the famine. In fact, they were the reason that God sent the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine. God gives us a lot of detail here. When you say this story goes on and on, God is emphasizing, he's highlighting this story. He wants us to dig into it and understand what he's doing because he doesn't change. He'll continue to do it. So while he's giving us a lot of detail here, it's because he wants us to know how intricately involved he is in his people Israel and in our ultimate restoration. Genesis 42. Let's begin in verse 1. Now when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his boys, "Why do you look at one another? Why are you just standing there staring at each other?" They were all standing around waiting for someone else to do something. He says, "Get busy, do something, we're starving." Verse 2, Jacob said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Get down there, buy some for us down there, that we may live and not die." They were about to starve to death. And this is only the second year of the famine. It's going to go on for 7 years. Verse 3. And Joseph's 10 brothers went down into Egypt to buy corn. Verse 4. But Benjamin, Joseph's brother, I would say his little brother, Jacob sent not with his brothers, for he said, lest peradventure mischief befall him. So Benjamin is the last son of Rachel. Jacob is very protective of him. Verse 5. And the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those, the other countries, that came down in Egypt, for the famine was in the land. Verse 6, and Joseph was the governor over the land. We saw last time how he was promoted by Pharaoh over everything. And it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down themselves before him, their faces to the earth. Okay, brethren, did you pick up on that? Joseph's brothers bowed down before Joseph. Wow. Joseph recognized them right away. How could Joseph contain himself and refrain from saying anything to them? Can you imagine a meeting like that? You remember Joseph's dream when he was 17 years old? How the brothers' chiefs in the field would bow down before Joseph? You can read about that in Genesis chapter 37. We've read that already. It caused the brothers to hate Joseph when he said, "Y'all will bow down before me," but that's what it amounted to. But remembering how cruel they had been to him, Joseph could have been tempted to say, "I'm not going to sell you anything. Get out of here." But Joseph was bigger than that. Joseph was a godly man. And he knew. He understood by this time, after being thrown in prison and all the things that he went through, he knew that he was being used of God, used by God for a much greater purpose. In order to be in God's kingdom, however, those brothers had a serious lesson to learn. How would Joseph help teach it to them, ensuring that they'd never forget the lesson? Verse 7, Genesis 42 and verse 7. Joseph saw his brothers. He knew them. But he made himself strange to them. He sort of disguised himself. And he spoke roughly to them in a foreign language. He said, "Where are you from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." Verse 8, Joseph knew his brothers, but they knew him not. You see, Joseph could easily put it together. He knew where they were from. He saw this big bunch of brothers. But the brothers had no clue that Joseph would be in such a high position. They had no suspicions at all. Verse 9. Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed of them, and he said to them, "You're spies. You came here to see the vulnerableness of this land. That's why you came." Now Joseph's mind must have been spinning, not only remembering how his brothers had treated him so cruelly, but more than that, Joseph was recognizing in his mind that God was working something out, something tremendous. Right then and there, Joseph must have thought to himself to begin putting a plan into action that would culminate in Jacob, Joseph's father, being brought down into Egypt as well. Verse 10, the brothers said unto him, "Oh no, my lord, we're not spies. We came here for food. We're your servants." Verse 11, "We are all one man's sons. We're true men. Your servants are no spies." Joseph needs a way to activate his plan. Verse 12, he said unto him, "No, you came down to here to see the vulnerability of the land. That's why you came." Verse 13, and they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. Behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not." Rather vague language. They don't admit to Joseph that there was no love lost between them and Joseph when he was young. This is years before. And so it's so ironic, standing before Joseph, they postulate that Joseph is dead. Verse 14, Joseph continues, "You're spies." Joseph tells them that they're going to have to prove they're not spies. Verse 15, "Hereby shall you be proved. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go forth from here unless your youngest brother comes here." Oh, how they must have hated to hear those words. The brothers are seriously caught between a rock and a hard place. Joseph would hold them hostage for Benjamin. The thought rushed through their mind, "Who's going to tell Dad?" Verse 16, "Send one of you and let him fetch your brother," talking about Benjamin. "You shall be kept in prison that your words may be proved, whether there be any truth in you or not. Or else by the life of Pharaoh, you're really spies. You surely are." Verse 17. And he put them all together in jail for 3 days. And he let them think about it long and hard. And they did. Verse 18. Joseph said unto them on the third day, "This do and live, for I fear God." So Joseph relents. He shows some mercy, giving God the credit in their presence. I thought that was a remarkable disclosure in a pagan land, speaking through an interpreter, saying, "God has mercy, I fear God." Verse 19, "If you be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go you, carry corn or grain for the famine of your houses." Verse 20, "But bring your youngest brother," speaking of Benjamin, "unto me. So shall your words be verified, and you shall not die." And they did so. They agreed to Joseph's terms, is what they did. And the brothers began to realize and admit that they had brought all these terrible circumstances on their own head, upon themselves. Verse 21, they said to one another, "We are truly guilty concerning our brother." They haven't admitted that to Joseph, but they admit it to each other. "In that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, but we wouldn't hear him. Therefore is this distress come upon us." They're putting it together. They're saying, "We're going through this because we sold Joseph into slavery." And Reuben, he said, "I told you so." Verse 22, Reuben answered, "Spoke not I unto you saying, do not sin against the child, and you wouldn't hear me? Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. We did wrong, his blood's on our head." Reuben admits it. Verse 23, and they didn't know that Joseph understood what they were saying, for he spoke to them through an interpreter. Brethren, picture that. They're all standing around. The brothers think they're sly. They're yakking back and forth, you know, spilling their guts. And Joseph understands every word. They think he's in the dark because they think He's an Egyptian, doesn't know the Hebrew tongue. As cruel as the brothers had been to Joseph, Joseph had compassion. He lost it emotionally, broke down crying. But he didn't allow the brothers to see him. Nope, not yet. Verse 24. And he, Joseph, he turned himself about from them, and he wept. And then he returned to them again, and he talked with them, and he took from them Simeon, and he bound him before their eyes. He's going to be the scapegoat. He's going to be the one that's locked up for a long time in prison while everybody else goes home. Verse 25, then Joseph commanded, fill their sacks with grain and to restore every man's money in his sack and to give them provision for the way. And thus did he unto them. Verse 27, and as one of them opened his sack, doesn't tell us which brother it was, to give his donkey some fodder at the inn, wherever they stopped to spend the night, he spotted his money, for behold, it was in the sack's mouth. He's going, oh no, the money that I brought down to Egypt to buy grain, here it is. I still have it. I didn't pay for this grain. And he said to his brothers, my money's still here. It's restored. It's even in my sack with the grain. And their heart failed them. They were afraid. They were scared, saying, what is this that God has done unto us? God's put us in a bind here, and we are in big trouble. What's going on? Verse 29. And they headed on back home, down to Canaan, to Jacob their father, unto the land of Canaan. They told him everything that happened to them, saying, verse 30, the man who's the Lord of the land, he spoke hard, rough to us, and he took us for spies of the country. Verse 31. And we said unto him, we're true men, we're not spies. And I imagine at that point they were wishing that they had been truer from the beginning, because they had done some dastardly things. Let's drop down to verse 36. Jacob their father said unto them, me have you bereaved of my children. Joseph is not. I'm sure in the Hebrew it carried much more connotation than that. It's like Joseph is gone. We never know what happened to him. And Simeon, he's in an Egyptian jail. And you're going to take Benjamin away? All these things are against me. It's too much. To his credit, Reuben showing some character, he guarantees Benjamin's safe passage, his safe return. Verse 37, and Reuben spoke to his father saying, slay my two sons if I don't bring him back. Deliver him into my hand and I'll bring him home to you again. He guarantees his father Jacob, I'll get Benjamin back to you. Jacob wouldn't hear of it. He put his foot down. Verse 38. He said, my son shall not go down with you. That's the end of the matter. It's fini. Finished. Don't bring it up again. For his brother is dead. There it is. Comes out totally. He's not saying he's not. He's dead. He's gone. We've lost Joseph. I'm not going to lose Benjamin too. And he is left alone of Rachel's sons. Benjamin's the last one. If mischief befalls him by the way in which you go, then shall you bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. It'll kill me if something happens to Benjamin. That's it. Jacob had already determined he was going to grieve Joseph until the day he died. But no more. He's not going to put Benjamin in jeopardy. They're at an impasse. And nothing was decided. No decision, no action of what to do about Benjamin. And so time goes on. And no crops come in. They probably planted some crops hoping to get a bumper crop because everything had been pretty dry in the drought. No crops came in. Genesis 43 and verse 1. And the famine was sore in the land. Verse 2. And it came to pass when they had eaten up all the grain that they had brought out of Egypt, their father said unto them, go again and buy us a little more food. Make another trip, make another haul down to Egypt. Okay, it's easy for Jacob to say, but Judah is going, who am I going to face, my dad or that man down there in Egypt? So Judah gets bold and he tells his father, unless Benjamin goes with him, nobody's going back down to Egypt for more food. Verse 3, and Judah spoke unto Jacob, saying, the man, he's talking about Joseph, He did solemnly protest unto us, saying, you shall not see my face unless your brother, Benjamin, is with you. Verse 4. If you, Jacob, will send our brother Benjamin with us, we'll go down there and buy some food for you. And then Judah, he's very bold in front of his daddy. I'm hoping that he's showing respect and honoring his father as the commandment demands. Judah issues an ultimatum. He says in verse 5, if you'll not send Benjamin down, we're not going. We're not going to go down. For this man said us, you will not see my face unless your brother is with you. Verse 6, and Israel said, wherefore deal you so ill with me as to tell the man that you even had a little brother? So Jacob, he's flustered, he's bewildered, he's frustrated, and he's a little irrational. That doesn't make sense. Verse 7, and they said, the man asks us straightly it is in the King James, specifically of our state, of our kindred, saying, is your father alive? Do you have another brother? And we told him, according to the tenor of his words, how could we certainly know that he'd say, bring your brother down? We didn't know that. The brothers told Jacob, this man, Zaphnath-Paneah in Egypt, is really smart. That's probably the name that they knew him by, because that's what Pharaoh called Joseph down in Egypt. Verse 8. And so Judah says to his father, send the lad, please, Benjamin, send Benjamin with me. We will arise and go that we may live and not die, both we and you and our little ones, because they have children of their own. So even Judah is coming around, and he's trying to make amends for selling Joseph into slavery. Verse 9. I'll be surety for him. Of my hand shall you require him. If I don't bring him back to you and set him before you, let me bear the blame forever. And then he gets a little feisty, it sounds like to me. We could have gone and been back by now if we hadn't procrastinated. In other words, if you hadn't procrastinated, Dad. Verse 10, for except we had lingered, surely now we had returned the second time. So Jacob says, okay, all right. Look, don't go down there empty-handed. Take the best of what we have and try to appease this Egyptian. Verse 11. And their father Israel said unto them, if it must be so now, do this. Take the best fruits of the land in your vessels and carry down the man a present, a little balm and little honey and spices and myrrh and nuts and almonds, and take double money for last load and for this load, the money that was brought again in the mouth of your sack. You bring it back. Maybe it was an oversight. So Jacob finally relents, and he allows them to take Benjamin. Big step on everybody's part. Verse 13, take also your brother, arise, go to the man. Verse 14, and God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may send away your other brother and Benjamin. If I be bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. In other words, it'll be more than I can handle. Verse 15, and the man took that present, and they took double money in their hand, and Benjamin, and they rose up and they went down to Egypt, and they stood before Joseph. Verse 16, and when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the ruler of his house, bring these men home, and slay an animal, make a feast ready, for these men shall dine with me at noon, at lunchtime. Verse 17, the ruler of the house did as Joseph had bade him to do, and he brought the brothers into Joseph's home. Verse 18, and the brothers were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house. They don't know what's going on. And they said, because the money that was returned in our sack the first time, we're brought in, that he may seek occasion against us. He's setting us up and fall upon us and take us for slaves and our donkeys. Take the whole thing. Verse 19, and they came near to the steward of Joseph's house, and they communed with him at the door of the house, and they started trying to explain, and they reiterate part of the story and everything, saying, honest, we had no idea what happened. Of course, Joseph's way ahead of them. He's guiding every move. He's guiding every decision. Verse 22, and other money have we brought down in our hands. Just to prove it, we brought your money back and some more money to buy grain. We don't know who put the money in our sacks. Brother, notice what happens here. A very big point. God's hand is in this. The steward of Joseph's house, he's a pagan unbeliever. Doesn't believe in the true God. And yet, he greatly respects Joseph's faith because Joseph has been such an example, a good example, and a representative of God in the use of his authority and his demeanor. Everything about Joseph was where it was supposed to be. Brethren, have you ever thought about it? That's the reputation we will have among the people in the world tomorrow, when we will be among the people saying, "This is the way, walk you in it." Verse 23, Genesis 43, 23. And he said, "Peace be to you, fear not, your God, the God of your father, has given you treasure in your sacks." I had your money. And he brought Simeon out to them. So the brothers are restored again together. Verse 24. And the man brought the brothers into Joseph's house. He gave them water. He washed their feet. He gave the donkeys fodder. He takes real good care of them. He makes them comfortable. He helps them get washed. The steward of Joseph's house makes them feel right at home. Verse 25. And they made ready the present. You remember the one that Jacob sent, all the nuts and fruit and smelling good things. For when Joseph came at noon, they heard that they should eat lunch there. And that was a surprise to them. Verse 26. When Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house, and they bowed themselves to him to the earth. That's again. They bowed again, brethren, hearkening back to chapter 37. Remember, Joseph as a young lad said, "You'll bow down before me." Verse 27. And so Joseph, he asked them their welfare and said, "Is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke," like he's arm's length, you know, distant from the goings on, "is he yet alive?" Verse 28. And they answered, "Thy servant, our father, is in good health." And he is alive. And they bowed down their heads and they made obeisance. Again, that's the third time by my count that Joseph's dream is fulfilled, that they bowed down to him. Verse 29. And Joseph lifted up his eyes and he saw his brother Benjamin. Now, brethren, that's a touching moment. Joseph has been in that hole out in the desert. He's been on that camel train. He's been in Potiphar's jail. He's been a lot of places. And he sees his little brother Benjamin, his mother Rachel's son. There's something very near and dear. He's their precious little boy. He's precious to Jacob and he's precious to Joseph. And he said, "Is this the younger brother of whom you spoke unto me?" He knew good and well that it was. And he said, "God be gracious unto you, my son." Issues him kind of a template greeting. But brethren, notice this. Joseph was not vindictive. He wasn't vengeful. He wasn't cruel or angry. He didn't try to get even. He wasn't cruel back to his brothers as they had been to him. Joseph's only agenda was to do God's will. He was a man of God. He wasn't easily offended. Verse 30. So Joseph hurried, for his bowels did yearn. He had this deep feeling, this emotion down in his gut for his brother Benjamin. And he sought somewhere to weep. For he entered into his chamber and he wept there. He was losing it. He was going to pieces. He broke up. He was shaking. He was crying. He just broke down and he sobbed. And he got his composure and he wiped his face and he cleaned himself up. And he went back to his own table by himself. On Joseph's table, there was this large, beautiful, ornate chalice, a goblet, if you will, to which the Egyptians attributed mysterious powers, because that's the way the magicians down in Egypt did it. The magicians looked at that goblet like it was their crystal ball. And it was on Joseph's table because he's the number two man in the land. Verse 31, Joseph washed his face and he went out and he refrained himself and said, "Set on bread, let's eat." Joseph sat at one of the three tables by himself. Verse 32. And they sat Joseph by himself for them by themselves and for the Egyptians, which did eat with him by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews. That's an abomination to the Egyptians. So, brethren, you see here that the Egyptian protocol amazed Joseph's brothers as they were each told where to be seated, starting with the oldest all the way down to the youngest, but nobody had inquired of their ages. What had happened is Joseph had previously clued in his maitre d', telling him, look, that one over there, that's Reuben. That's the oldest one. He went down through the list. Verse 33. And they sat before Joseph, the firstborn, it's Reuben, according to the birthright, all the way down to the youngest, according to the youth. And the men marveled. I mean, they knew the pecking order. They knew that. But how did these Egyptians know this? The brothers realized that they were being easily outmaneuvered by the cunning Egyptians, who outsmarted them at every move. Every time they turned, the Egyptians were ahead of them. Verse 34. And Joseph took and sent servings unto them before them. But Benjamin's portion was five times so much as any of theirs. And they drank wine and they were merry with him. It's kind of funny. But they loaded down food and meat on Benjamin's plate until it was running over and overflowing. Meanwhile, Joseph is fast at work on the next stage of his plan. He's busy. Let's go to Genesis 44 now, brethren. Verse 1. And Joseph commanded the steward of his house, saying, fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can possibly carry. Put every man's money in the mouth of the sack. Verse 2. And put my cup, this big, beautiful, divining goblet, put the silver cup in the sack's mouth of the youngest. Who's that? Benjamin. And his corn money. And so the steward did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. Verse 3. As soon as the morning was light, the men were off on this long journey back to Canaan with their donkeys. And they were probably, knowing those sons of Jacob, they were probably reveling in the fact, we pulled it off. We got Benjamin. We're heading home. We got grain. We got everything. It worked out great. Verse 4. And when they were gone out of the city, not very far, Joseph said unto the steward, up, follow after the men. And when you overtake them, say unto them, why do you reward evil for good? Weren't we good to you? You stole the beautiful ornate ceremonial chalice right off of my table. Verse 5. Is not this in which my Lord drinks, and whereby indeed he divines? You've done evil in doing such a thing. Verse 6. And the steward overtook them, and he spoke those same words. Verse 7. And the brothers said, wherefore saith these words my Lord to us? God forbid that your servants should steal that chalice. We wouldn't do such a thing. Verse 8. Behold the money which we found in our sacks, mouth, we brought again to you out of the land of Canaan. We're not trying to steal anything. We brought the money back. How then should we steal out of your Lord's house silver, even gold? Verse 9. For whomsoever of thy servants it be found, let him die. We didn't take it. Somebody else got it. You find it on us, we'll be your slaves. The steward said, I'm only looking for the guilty party, the one guilty party that stole it. Whoever stole it is going to pay. Verse 10. And he said, now, also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my servant. You, the rest of you guys, you're blameless. You can go free. Verse 11. Then they speedily took down every man his sack off the donkey onto the ground. Every man opened up the sack of grain. Verse 12. And the steward searched. He began at the oldest. He went and looked in Reuben's sack. And he went all the way down to the youngest. He left off at the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Oh, no. What a nightmare. It seemed as if their hearts would fail them at that moment. God blinded their reasoning to the point that they fell for the same trick a second time. They didn't remember, hey, this is what happened the first time when we were leaving Egypt. Verse 13, they tore their clothes and laden every man his donkey, and they returned to the city. It seems that Judah was laden with guilt more than the others. He was the one that convinced Jacob to let Benjamin go down to Egypt. Verse 14. And Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house. Boy, this is a terrible day. And he was still there, and they fell before him on the ground. How many times have they fallen? Have they bowed down before Joseph? Is this the fourth time? Verse 15. And Joseph said unto them, what deed is this that you have done? Don't you know that such a man as I can certainly divine? Joseph is playfully toying with them. He says, don't you know that I can see into the future? And actually, Joseph could see into the future because he was the one that was making it happen. He was orchestrating everything. Joseph says, you should know better than try to pull the wool over my eyes. Judah says, we'll all be your slaves. God has exposed our sin of selling our brother into slavery. He's saying that to himself. Verse 16, Judah said, what can we possibly say unto you, my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God has exposed the iniquity of your servants. Brethren, that's repentance. That's an admission of guilt, the first step. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and also he with whom the cup was found. Verse 17. And Joseph said, hey, I'm not that kind of guy. God forbid that I should do that. But this man Benjamin, in whose hand the cup was found, that scoundrel, he's going to be my servant. As for the rest of you, get you up in peace and return unto your father. You see, he's messing with them, brethren. He's saying, you know, y'all are free to go. All I want is this little brother of yours. No big deal. You're free to go. Verse 18, Judah is beside himself. His heart's being torn out. Judah came near unto Joseph, and he said, oh, my Lord, let your servant, I pray you, speak a word in my Lord's ears, and let not your anger burn against your servant, for you're like Pharaoh. He says, but let me have my voice. Let me have a word with you. So Judah issues a fervent, heartfelt appeal, not for himself, not for the brothers, not even for Benjamin, but for Jacob's sake. And so Judah begins to recite how it all took place back in Canaan. He explains the whole story of how they told his father and Jacob would die if it happened this way and everything. Let's drop down to verse 30, Genesis 44 and verse 30. Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad, Benjamin, he's not with us, seeing that Jacob's life is bound up in the lad's life, it'll just kill him if we go home without Benjamin. Judah is appealing with everything he can to Joseph. Verse 31. It shall come to pass when he sees that the lad is not with us, he'll die. This is not hype. He'll die. It'll kill him. He'll have a heart attack. And thy servant shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave. We'll kill our dad if we do that. And Judas tells Joseph, I'm the one that's responsible. Verse 32, for your servant, Judas speaking of himself, I became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, if I don't bring him home, I'll bear the blame forever. Judas says, take me instead, I beg of you. Notice this, brethren. These are godly attributes. Judah is actually laying down his life for Benjamin. Verse 33. Now therefore, I beg of you, let your servants abide here, me, instead of the lad. I'll be a slave to my Lord. And let the lad go with his brethren. Verse 34. For how shall I go to my father and the lad not be with me, lest peradventure I see the evil that shall come on my father? So Judah poured his heart out selflessly, not selfishly, as he's been selfish all along. Okay, we come to Genesis chapter 45, brethren. Verse 1. Joseph could not refrain himself before all that stood by him, and he cried out, make everybody leave me right now. Get out of here. Get out of the room. And there was nobody left in the room while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. Okay, brethren, this is a very, very touching story. Joseph commanded all the Egyptians, the maitre d', the steward, all of his people, leave. I want to be here with these people alone. And Joseph is going to make himself known to his brothers. I want you to picture the reconciliation that's taking place. The 12, all 12 of them now, the 12 sons of Jacob alone in a room. And Joseph broke down. He totally lost it. Genesis 45 and verse 2. And he wept. He sobbed aloud, so loud that the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard him. They were outside the doors, the closed doors. They could hear him sobbing in there from the bottom of his heart. Keep in mind, brethren, Joseph's brothers haven't figured out what's going on yet. They must have wondered what in the world is taking place. Joseph knows what's about to happen, but they still don't have any idea. They haven't put it together. All of a sudden, Joseph switches from the Egyptian tongue, the language of the Egyptians, and he begins to speak in the Hebrew language, in the very dialect of Canaan. He's a homeboy. He speaks face to face with them. And he probably took off his great imposing royal headdress and his imperial robe. You know, he's bearing it all. Verse 3, and Joseph said unto his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father yet live? And his brothers couldn't answer him. They were too shocked. They were stunned at his presence. They were tongue-tied. It was too much, too fast. They had switched in a moment, in the blinking of an eye, from being in deep trouble to the realization that Joseph yet lives. And he's a ruler, all in an instant. Verse 4, Joseph said to his brothers, come near unto me. I can imagine how hesitantly they would be doing that. Joseph says, I pray you, come near. And they did. They came up close to Joseph. And he said again, I'm Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Can't you see that? Now Joseph knew that God's hand was guiding his life. And he realized that God was even more controlling than Joseph's own benevolent, manipulative efforts with his brothers. I mean, Joseph's doing his best with his brothers. How perfect was God guiding Joseph's life? Brethren, do you see God's work toward the restoration of Israel? Do you see it in our own lives? It's there, brethren. This is a long time ago, but God's telling us this is the way it is now. We haven't gotten to the New Jerusalem yet. I'm still working in this same way. Genesis 45 and verse 5. Note very closely, brethren, Genesis 45 and verse 5. Joseph says, now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves. Don't be beating yourself up that you sold me to that camel caravan going across the desert. Joseph says, don't be angry with yourselves that you sold me down the river down here. Why? For God did send me before you to preserve life. There's the big picture, brethren. That's what was happening. It wasn't Judah making a few bucks off of little Joseph and selling him to the camel caravan. God did send me before you to preserve life. That's what happened. Let's get that straight. It was for the restoration of Israel, which God would do countless times, not just now. God would do it many times. We see it happening when God delivers the children of Israel from Egypt. And there's a price to pay, but God bails his people out. He restores them over and over. He's restoring them now. He knows where every grain is. Not a grain has fallen to the ground of Israel. It says that in Amos. God knows where his people are. Joseph is a type of Jesus Christ to deliver his brothers. The name Jesus means deliverance. After the incredible story of Joseph and his brothers in Egypt, when Joseph reveals himself as their brother, Joseph reveals how it was God who had orchestrated the entire epoch. God worked this out. Verse 6, for these 2 years, Joseph says, has the famine been in the land? And there are 5 more years in which there shall be neither earing nor harvest. There's not a blade of grass going to grow. Verse 7, Joseph explains, and God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. God restores Israel. They wouldn't make it another 5 years. They're only 2 years into the famine and they're going hungry. They would die. They would be parched and wither. Verse 8. So now, my brothers, it was not you that sent me here, but God. And he's made me a father to Pharaoh. I'm a big deal down here. I'm your brother, yes. But down here, I'm father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. My goodness. So Joseph rightly credits God for the entire turn of events. He's not holding his brethren guilty. He didn't stoop down. He didn't blame them. Says, all your fault. He gives God the credit. Brethren, do you realize that we today are in the midst of an even greater turn of events? The deliverance and the restoration of Israel, even a spiritual Israel, with each brother's name engraven above the door in a heavenly city. Verse 9. So Joseph says, look, you hurry, go back up to my father, Jacob, and say unto him, thus says your son Joseph, who's alive, by the way, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me. Don't hesitate. Now what a shock that's going to be to Jacob. We'll get there in just a minute. Verse 10. And you shall live down here in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children, grandchildren, the flocks, everything. All come down here. Joseph's about 39 years old now. He was about 30 when he first stood before Pharaoh. There were 7 years of plenty and then 2 years of famine. That would make him 39. You can go back to Genesis 41 and verse 46. We're in Genesis 45, verse 11. And there I will nourish you in the land of Goshen in Egypt, for yet there are 5 years of famine, lest you and your household and all that you have comes to poverty. The brothers, they're just beginning to rebound in their thinking. They're just barely getting there. Is this really Joseph? Verse 12. And behold, your eyes see in the eyes of my brother Benjamin that it is my mouth that speaks to you. They had to look at him closely to see that it was him. Joseph said, look, you're going to be moving to Egypt, lock, stock, and barrel. Get that through your heads. Verse 13. You shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and everything that you've seen down here. Make haste and bring down my father. Verse 14. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and he hugged him and he wept. And Benjamin wept upon his neck. Benjamin must be recognizing him, must be believing it. Verse 15. Moreover, he kissed all of his brothers and he wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. Yeah, imagine so. Things like, wow, it worked out like you said. We did bow down before you. You sure had that right. For the first time in their lives, they were finally family. They've never been family before. There's a reconciliation. There's a restitution here. Verse 16. And the fame thereof was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brothers are come. It pleased Pharaoh very well and his servants. Brethren, it chokes me up just to read about it. Can you imagine the reconciliations yet to come? Our reconciliations with our family and our brothers and our sisters all over the earth. We're going to do this. This is a picture of a great restoration of Israel that God says will come. Verse 17, Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, loading up your donkeys and get you to the land of Canaan. Get on out of here and take your father and your households and come to me and I'll give you the good food of the land of Egypt and you shall eat of the fat of the land. And oh, by the way, Pharaoh says, I want you to travel first class. No more walking along with a donkey, walking in the dirt. Verse 19, now you are commanded, this do you. Take some carriages, take some chariots out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father to come. You'll be riding in a vehicle. Don't pack your stuff, just come as you are. There's plenty here for everybody. It's going to be like the feast, brethren, for us. You know, when Joseph's brothers were leaving and coming back, they were doing like we do when we go to the feast. We pack up, we leave everything behind, and we don't look back. And then Joseph said, here's a new set of clothes for every one of you. Verse 20. Regard not your old stuff, for the good of all the land of Egypt is yours. Verse 21. And the children of Israel, the sons of Jacob, they did so. And Joseph gave them carriages and wagons according to the command of Pharaoh. And he gave them food for the trip. Verse 22. To all of them gave he, each man, a change of raiment. But to Benjamin, he gave 300 pieces of silver. That's a lot to carry. And five new sets of clothes. Five new suits. He just loads it down on Benjamin. I think that's funny, but, you know, he has it to give, and he, you know, he's trying to show his love, and he's just heaping it on Benjamin. Oh, what a great day. Verse 23. And to his father, Jacob, he sent after this manner. 10 donkeys laden with the good things of each. That's a lot. 10 donkeys can carry. Imagine each donkey can carry close to a ton. I don't know how much a donkey carries, but this is a lot of stuff. And 10 she donkeys laden with corn, bread, meat. This is just for Jacob's trip. Just so Jacob can say, break out the food, eating like we do when we go to the feast. Verse 24. So he sent his brothers away and they departed, and he said unto them, take care, be careful, God be with you. And the way it says in the King James is, see that you fall not out by the way. In other words, be careful. Have a good trip. Verse 25. And they went up out of Egypt, and they came to the land of Canaan, to Jacob their father. Okay, brethren, this is rather hilarious. Looking back on it, rather heart-wrenching to go through. Verse 26. And they told Jacob, saying, Joseph is yet alive. He's the governor of all of Egypt down there. He's the boss of that whole country down there. Jacob's heart fainted. He didn't believe him. It was too much to believe. Verse 27. They told him the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. And when he saw the carriages that Joseph had sent to carry him, where did all these wagons come from? These wagon loads and all these donkey loads. Where did all this come from? The spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. He started to think, how can this be? It must be true. Benjamin's back. Our patriarch Jacob was hard to convince. So we'll see in a moment where God intervened to convince Jacob, now Israel, to go down to Egypt to be with Joseph. He wasn't just going to rush down in his old age down to Egypt. Verse 28. And so Israel, that's Jacob, he said, it's enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I believe it. I'm going to go down there and see him before I die. And brethren, I want you to notice, Jacob also gives God all the credit. Let's look at just a few verses here in chapter 46, and then we'll conclude. Genesis 46 and verse 1. In Israel, he took his journey with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba, and he offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac, and also to the God of Abraham. He puts first things first. He gives God the credit. He thanks God. He sees God's hand in all of this. Jacob is a converted man. He knows that God's will is being done. He has faith. He's putting it all together. All of a sudden, it's like the resurrection. Joseph is alive. He that was dead is alive. It's very much like when Abraham thought that he had to slay Isaac. It's like a resurrection. Joseph is alive. Verse 2. And God spoke unto Israel in the visions of the night. He has this dream, but it's a visionary dream. And he heard the voice, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. He's always ready to do God's will. God reminds Jacob of his promises to Abraham. Verse 3. And he said, I am God, the God of your father, that's Isaac. Don't be afraid to go down into Egypt, for there I will make of you a great nation. He's going to really prosper down there. God says, I'll be with you the entire time. And brethren, that applies to you. That applies to me. Applies to us equally today. God is with us. Do you believe it? Do you believe it enough to pack up and do what God says that we're supposed to do? Verse 4, we see God says, I'll go down there to Egypt with you. I'll be with you. I'll surely bring you up again. So you're going to go down to Egypt. I'll bring you up again. What's God saying? I will restore you, Israel, and Joseph shall put his hand upon your eyes. What's that about? You remember, because the eyes of Jacob were dim for age. Verse 5. Jacob rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel, all the brothers, carried Jacob their father. He probably wasn't able to walk that well anymore. And their little ones, their own children, their wives, in the carriages that Pharaoh had provided. I wish I knew how many carriages this was. This is a regular parade, a wagon train, because there are a lot of people. If you count them up, there's 70 going down. One count says 75. If you count everybody, Joseph and his wives and his kids, and Jacob and his sons and their wives and their kids, there's 75 of them. Verse 7, his sons and his sons' sons with him, and his daughters and his sons' daughters, all his children brought he with him to Egypt. We have to look, brethren, to see what God is doing. And so today, we've looked at just a few of the details of preparations God was bringing about for the children of Israel to survive and to go into the promised land. God did it. God made it happen. No man could pull this off. A famine, a drought, years of plenty, Joseph surviving, the brothers not recognizing Joseph, Jacob's doubts, the pride and the love that they had for Benjamin. It's a beautiful story. But brethren, sometimes we think that's ancient history. In the future, the New Jerusalem, that's so far in the future, is to be incomprehensible. We're right in the middle of the wagon train. This is being carried along right now. God knows where Israel is. He knows where his people are. We looked at just a few of the details of preparation God was bringing about for the children of Israel to survive and to go into the promised land. We saw how in advance God was working to bring his people, the restoration of Israel, spiritual Israel, into the future family of God and the kingdom of God. Brethren, go back and read this story once in a while and understand we are right in the middle of the restoration of Israel.